Formula Access. Today we bring a high-profile guest. This has been a long time in the making. Today we've got Valeria. She is the head of motorsports fuels for Shell in partnership with Ferrari and a number of other teams in Formula E. You guys, this has been going on for quite some time. They're very, very difficult company to get people on, and they have been absolutely gracious to start bringing us guests. And we talk motorsports fuel, lubricants, we talk Formula One, we talk Formula E, we talk all of the series that they support. And as somebody that stands by my son's side while he races go-karts, this is quite a fascinating topic. So, you guys, grab a cup of coffee, enjoy, meet Valeria. Formula Access. Today, we have a guest that hits really, really, really close to home on my actual day job. We were connected on LinkedIn, and as you guys constantly request people from different titles, different teams, different areas of Formula One and just motorsport in general, I don't know how we got connected, when we got connected, but I came across the profile of Valeria Loretti from Shell Motorsports. And I was like, this is going to be interesting because the topic and focus of Formula One is always aero and engines. And I thought, I'm from oil and gas. I'm from technology. Let's get somebody on the fuel side. I reached out to her and she came on and she immediately responded. And here she is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Ryan. Yeah, and I agree. It's a hidden side of the technology and whatever goes inside a car. But to win a race, you need it. Everything is perfect.
What's fascinating to me, and I just got back from Miami, and you know, and I was in the garage, and I was, you know, in the paddock and around all the cars. And I knew this episode was coming, and I guess just because I knew the episode was coming and I'm in the industry of oil and gas, every car has a massive energy company logo on the side of their car. And it's just like that topic you never really talk about. So I'm actually really excited for this conversation because Shell and Ferrari have had a partnership for a very, very long time. And it's pretty out there. So thank you for coming on. I know it's been a process and we've been putting this together for like 4 or 5 months, but I'm glad you're here, honestly.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
So just to educate the audience, who are you and what do you do? What do you do today in Formula One?
Yes. So my name is Valeria Loretti. My background is a PhD in chemistry. And since a couple of years, I'm delivery manager motorsports at Shell. That means that I am the head of the R&D department that is accountable for developing and designing all products that go into the vehicles of our partners when they are engaging in motorsport. So we are supporting Scuderia Ferrari in Formula One. We're supporting Ducati Corse in the MotoGP. We have partnerships with Hyundai for the Rally World Championship. We work together with Nissan in the Formula E area. So Shell has a very long history and heritage of being engaged in motorsports because we consider this as a true innovation platform that really pushes the boundaries.
Because it's not just fuel, gasoline, right? It's really like any sort of lubricant or, I guess, liquid inside of the car. Is that accurate?
Well, it depends. Yeah, from race series to race series. If you're focusing on Formula One, the partnership that we have with Scuderia Ferrari goes back, dates back to the 50s, so it's over than 70 years that we are partnering, and as you said, it's the most recognized partnership in the paddock. The packaging is big on the side of the car, on the back of every team member, but is also playing a very big role in the overall technology achievement and being a competitive advantage for Scuderia Ferrari. Because what we do, we design and develop dedicated fuel, dedicated engine oils, and all those products that are needed inside a race car. So think about air fluid or coolant fluids or whatever is going to be in the car. So we are partners for that. And the important thing is that we don't give them whatever. We design and develop dedicated products, bespoke products that have as a goal really the aim to give them a competitive edge, more performance, more efficiency, and more reliability, all elements that are really key to anything in racing.
So what is your role, like, within this partnership? Like, what is your role specifically, not just the partnership as a whole, but like, what is your role within Shell?
Well, we do have a team. It's not just me, obviously. We have a team of very smart people, and some of them are developers, so they know very well how to set up a fuel and how to make it work. And the key here is really the partnership, the working together on a day-to-day basis with our partners and understanding what is the very special need of their power unit. So we don't just prepare a fuel that is meeting the Formula One specifications, but we also prepare a fuel that is meeting the engine appetite and is optimized and trimmed to deliver maximum performance and efficiency in the internal combustion engine. Same for the oil. So the oil is really key to protect, cool down, and help against wear and to lubricate well the engine. And we design a bespoke formulation that is really meeting the requirements of these very special running conditions of the engine. So our team is really there, you know, to understand how to co-engineer the products that go in the internal combustion engine and how to optimize them to support the engine work at its best.
And does that partnership follow the engines even to call it customer team level?
Yeah, well, the customer team do have a Ferrari engine, and any Ferrari engine comes with Shell products as a package. Yeah, the development is bespoke with Ferrari. We work with Ferrari engineers. We have almost daily meetings trying to understand, you know, they constantly keep developing, constantly look, strive for improvement. And the same is for my team. So we're always trying to find the next level of optimization, of perfection. Because obviously, the racing world is very, very competitive. And you can't just relax and say, oh, we have a fantastic product.
Right, right.
Because everybody will catch up.
it's a unique world. You know, I do have access to the sport and to the teams and the people, and it's incredible to me just the amount of secrecy and kind of intellectual property that exists in such a rule-bound sport. I just like, I love the innovation. I love the just, I hate to always call it the gray area of the rules, but it's like you have these defined parameters and how can you kind of like move through them within the guidelines. And I like that to me is the fascinating part of Formula One as a whole, is just, you can have this very, very complex set of rules and guidelines, yet you can make a car that is 0.2 seconds faster than any other car if you figure something out in there that's, you know, that's different. And it doesn't seem like much to, you know, newer fans or people that have never raced before, but that's like the difference between first and last place. you know, in this particular sport. And I just, I find just the whole component of what you guys do fascinating. And I like, it actually really hit me hard in Miami when I was in the garage of Alfa Romeo. And, you know, you can pretty much kind of like go anywhere there except for the engine room. Like that is like quarantined off, and it's like, yeah, you're not going to go back there. You know, it's all the Ferrari engineers, it's all the Shell people, you know, and it's, you know, you can't see it, can't be back there, can't be near it. And I just like, I love it. I think that's what drives the sport, because as I'm walking around the paddock and as I'm engaging and just, you know, the track in general, there's so many people from tech and so many people from kind of these, just fast-paced, innovative industries that are fascinated by like how you can do these things inside of a sport and not just business, which it is a business, but to all the people like me, it's a sport. So it's something I watch for entertainment, and you guys do a great job.
It is a sport, and is a sport that really pushes you beyond any boundaries. So as you rightly said, obviously, rules are there, and you have to play by the rules. But it really pushes you to think by shifting the paradigm, by trying to find alternative ways, alternative technologies. Or, I mean, you really need to think hard to not to fall into the things that have already been tried. You always have to strive and find something new, because that is where the competitive advantage will come. And Formula One is the pinnacle of motorsports, because it's always been leading these technology innovation and push. So I can speak for my area of competence, which is obviously fuels and lubricants. We really extract an incredible value from the partnership, because we can really experiment into, you know, new areas and have the freedom to try new chemistries and new approaches. So. And that is where you really find down to the unexpected things. That is where you get those learnings that very proudly we directly bring into our road products. So whenever we discover something really interesting and usable, we try to make it to find the way to bring this into our Shelby Power Fuels or our Helix products for lubricants. So it is that is actually the real value of the partnership. We have an amazing playground for R&D, and we're really keen to exploit it.
Okay, I have to ask this question. Okay, so I kind of started this whole foray in Cora. So Cora is like a very refined kind of polished version of Reddit. You know, it's very grammatical. It's very polished. It's kind of like a blogger's playground of question answer. And so I started this whole foray on that, of like answering questions of like business, sponsorship, leadership, optics, all of that around Formula One. I'm not in the industry. I just like, if I'm a business person, so like, how would I handle that? But a question that I've seen quite a bit on there is, what kind of fuel do Formula One cars use? And the answer has always been kind of like the same fuel you get at the gas station. Is that, I mean, from a high level kindergartner's response, is that like, is it the same?
No, it's not the same.
Okay.
But it is extremely similar. So. Okay. Shelby Power Race Fuel, the one that goes into the Ferrari race cars, contains 99% of the same component types as Shelby Power Road Fuel.
Okay.
That means that, let's say, the components, the ingredients that we use to blend this race fuel are of the same type of what everybody can buy at any Shell retail station. And they are really, really close. But how these components are mixed, what is the balance, and how they are optimized, that's the great secret. And obviously, 99%, we have one 1% of a secret magic ingredient that we can play with. So there are subtleties, and I like to use these analogies. So it's like when you go and buy dress or a suit in whatever retail store, then you can buy something that fits you, but that anybody can use, anybody of your size, of your stature and everything. But if you go to a tailor and ask them to make a suit just for you, that will be meeting your requirements and will fit you really perfectly. And that's exactly the difference. So whenever we at Shell develop differentiated fuels, specialty fuels for our customers, we need to take into account that everybody will go at the retail station. So this fuel needs to fulfill the appetite of every car you drive. And that means that has a lot of different features, but is not designed to meet one very special appetite. And that's the difference when you have one customer, one engine, one specific design of the engine, which is the one for this season, and you design and develop and optimize the fuel just for that. So you may use the same ingredients, but it's going to be different.
I'm so thankful that I had you on the show, because I just have found it so hard to imagine that the pinnacle of motorsport could go to like a Shell gas station and fill up all their fuel containers and it's the same thing. So
it's not the same, but it's so similar that you can really take learnings and have a shared understanding, and that's the good thing. So we my team that designs fuels for motorsports works also very close to team designing the new generation of our Shell fuels, and we have a constant exchange. We do have a part of the projects that deal with academia, and we have PhD students, and we have collaboration with a number of universities. So it goes also really on the basics understanding of combustion chemistry and thermodynamics, and how really did the combustion deliver this energy, and how can we optimize the fact that the engine can work, can use it all. And obviously these leaks into understanding and discoveries that we use for Shell V-Power road fuels. So they are very, very similar, but they are absolutely not the same.
Okay. So I want to sit in that response real quick. And I want to take it down to like a segment of the audience that I know pays attention to the show, and that is karting. And so my son races go-karts, and I remember last summer, in the middle of the summer, it was our first season that he was racing his own kart, and it was the middle of the summer. It was a really hot day, and it was just like it was not performing normally. And, you know, and it was the engine, you know, and it was just like, okay, it's can't get it to like go, you know? And so like, we're walking around and looking at like the other go-karts, and I started noticing that some of the drivers had lifted their fuel pump off of the engine block. And I was like, well, that's weird. Why would you do that? So my father-in-law, who's an engineer, I was like, why would you lift that off the end? Like, cause people were putting like sponges in between, just anything to diffuse the heat. And he was just saying like, you know, the gas expands as it comes across the pump in the really hot engine in the middle of the summer. And so like, you want that condensed, which is cool because you can get more fuel flow. Is that when you think of like thermodynamics and you think of like your role, are these the type of kind of scenarios that you guys think through, obviously within the rules?
Yeah, and I would say this is very much the basics, so we go far beyond this. But yes, if you read through all the technical regulations in Formula One, you will find out that the fuel needs to be at a specific temperature.
Okay.
Because you're not allowed to cool it down too much. Because obviously everybody would be doing that. You can put more fuel in the same volume.
So in theory, if I was to take my fuel bucket and put it in an ice box, like, would that be better for this? Like,
Yes, because obviously density is related to temperature, and density is a measurement of how much energy in the same volume you have.
okay. I'm gonna have to ask the track if I'm allowed to put the fuel in the ice box. We do this for fun. We don't race competitively. We race for fun. It's father-son bonding. But like, as I'm sitting in there, like working on the go-kart all day, these are the things we think about of like, you know,
Yeah,
I
maybe
maybe
you start by not keeping that in the heat.
Yes. We've done these things. We haven't run into the problem yet this year, so we're good. So as a fuel supplier, like what is your ultimate goal? Like how do you define success as a fuel supplier? I mean, are there A/B studies that you do? Like how do you gauge performance in your product?
So we have a relatively large team just dedicated for fuel development, and we do work together with Scuderia Ferrari really on a very, very close basis. So the fuel team is half Shell and half Ferrari, and there is a constant exchange of knowledge and input and how to strive into the next level of performance. Obviously, like every other project, you define milestones, and in Formula One specifically, it's very important to bring a lot of strategy and thinking on how to set up the milestones and the testing, because from this year on, the dyno hours are very much restricted. So you don't have the luxus to go and try, let's say, 30 different fuel blends. It will take a long time. It will be very cost intense and is no longer allowed. So we have developed together with our partners a number of digital tools. So we start really based obviously on our experience and our knowledge, but also based on the digitalization that we have brought into the project to work on paper blends. And our digital tools are like an algorithm that give us the prediction of the properties starting from the composition of the fuel. So this is based on how the composition, how the different components will burn. So it has a lot of thermodynamics, a lot of combustion chemistry knowledge in it, and will give you big properties that are key for the engine. And you can do this exercise a very high number of times, because if you go back 10, 15 years ago, there was a lot of wet try and fail. Now, with the help of our digitalization journey, we can really test a huge number of fuels. Just to give you an example, we have modeled for the fuel that we are running now in 2022 over a million of different formulations just to understand what is the most efficient. And this is a very intense exercise, but it's also it's great. It's a great output, because from our side, we will identify those formulations that are the most promising, and from an engine simulation side, we can check if these formulations are likely to satisfy the appetite of the engine. So where the engine is going to be then positioning, what kind of performance is going to be the output. And when you have modeled your candidates, then you can go into testing, and that with a relatively small amount of components, a small amount of candidates, but that is already a very high niveau that has good opportunities to deliver the formulation you really want. So this is a process that has helped us improve the efficiency of the steps a lot. But the key element is always going to be how the engine behaves. You can do a lot of simulations, but then when you go to the engine is where really the time of truth. There are different approaches. There are different engines. So you can use single cylinder, you can use a complete engine, you can have different targets of your tests. And all of these will then trim down the formulations into the final one. Obviously, for fuel in racing, the main delivery is around performance. But efficiency is really a key parameter. And obviously, you don't have refilling anymore. And this means that with the fuel you put on the car, you have to finish the race. And on top of that, you have to have a little bit extra for the FIA to take samples, because that's another important element. And therefore, the performance and the efficiency are really the most important parameters. But being in Formula One is a constant challenge. So as I said before, you're always pushed to be better and better and better. And the journey of the sports is also very ambitious. And you know that regulations are going to change in 2026. There is a big step change where the fuels are going to be 100% made out of advanced sustainable components. This is a new parameter that we have obviously to consider. So we will have to optimize and develop around performance, efficiency, and sustainability.
That, okay. So I mean, someone that's been in the exploration or upstream part of oil and gas my entire career, how do you produce a sustainable fuel? I mean, the fuel, in my experience, comes from underground, you know, from oil. What does sustainability in fuel actually mean?
We didn't have yet the silver bullet. So even if I could, I would not be able to tell you where the fuel is going to come from. But because we really need to find the best of the best formulation possible, we are really exploring every single alternative opportunity. So the definition of advanced sustainable component is, as defined by the FIA, is very close to what you can find in road cars, renewable energy directive. And it goes actually beyond that. And it requires that it defines the feedstocks. It requires that that should be second generation. So, for example, in not in competition with the food chain, and gives a very clear indication of where the feedstock can come from. But the idea is really that these fuels will not be fossil, will not be adding any CO2 to the environment. So there is an element of circular economy. It could be biofuels, it could be synthetic fuels, it could be recycled plastics, it could be a lot of different elements. And this is actually what boosts also the technology and the innovation. We can really drive things that are now some kind of niche applications and show that they are good powerful components also for race fuels. This will help, obviously, developing this industry, and ultimately it could be a good advantage for everybody running an internal combustion engine over the next couple of years. So that's the intent of the FIA, and our task is to find the most sustainable components that are also meeting the requirements of performance and efficiency. And as I said, it's not just one technology that is going to be the silver bullet. We really need to understand all potential different components that you can find on the market. You can produce yourself, you can develop new processes for. So everything is open, and it will be a mosaic of different energy sources that will likely deliver the best formulation for our partners.
You're so good at this. You've been so media trained. And I don't mean that like you twisted anything. Like, you basically took a really dumb question and had a brilliant answer. And I, like, the whole time you were talking, I was like, oh, she saved that. She saved it. Thank you. Like, I think that's probably a better way that I should have asked that is, what is the FIA's definition of sustainability? Because what you say makes perfect sense in that realm. Do you have to be synergetic with you know, in 2026, there's a different kind of power makeup between electric and combustion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe it's 50-50
with regards to horsepower.
Does that affect what you guys do? I mean, is that coming into play with Shell?
That's the task of the engineers in Maranello.
Okay.
So not an area that we can affect with our fuels.
But that doesn't come into play with the sustainability component of Shell.
The sustainability element by regulations is restricted to the fuel formulations. There is a one-liner that talks about the oils and engine oils needs to be recycled. And we're also working to find the best way to make it happen. Obviously, sustainability is a big topic, and it touches all the elements. If you look at the fuel, of course, the fuel is very visible because it's going to be burned in the engine. And as you said, fuel for me comes from the underground. Now we're going into a new, we have to think about the future. We have to think about how things can change over the years because it can't stay as it is today. So the changes in the fuel are probably not going to be a game changer for the overall emissions of the sport, but they are a very visible element and they will drive the conversation and they will push the technology. So it's a very important element. And of course, as energy partners, we are also involved in a number of different projects that go beyond the track. So if I can quote a couple of examples, very easy. So at every race, we travel with at least two scientists, and we have a small unit. It's called the Shell Trackside Laboratory, which is like a small container, and inside is a room that is perfectly fit to be a chemical laboratory. We do all our analysis on track there, and this container has been renewed and rethought with sustainability in mind. So we use the we have a lighter unit now. We have a unit that has a lot of recycled or vegetable fiber elements inside. So the floor is recycled rubber, or all the drawers and the cupboards are made with vegetable fibers instead of carbon fibers. And we obviously, by reducing the weight of the unit, we can impact the emissions linked to logistics. And they're all small steps, but they are all very important steps. As partners with Ferrari, we supply them also with the fuel for their generators. You know, in the paddock, you need a lot of energy. You need aircon, you need lights, you need coffee, you need a lot of things. And these things are partially powered by generators. So we substituted the original diesel with the sustainable fuel, which is containing 60% of sustainable diesel, and that is also helping reducing the emissions. So there is a lot of different steps and small bricks that will then be the foundation of this journey towards sustainability.
I think that is a spot on point that I've witnessed at scale in oil and gas is companies like Shell and super majors, and even down to small independent oil companies, are becoming energy companies. I think this is a topic that is not spoken about enough, is your energy companies. And if that energy comes from renewable free energy, then that's what is going to come. You know, it's not mm-hmm. just we're oil and we're going to bury everything else that's possible, because I've had deep interaction with a lot of very large oil and natural gas companies, and they're all seeking and investing heavily into sustainability, decarbonization. And I've worked very closely with Shell and other business units. And I can tell you that the effort and the investment, capital investment, personnel investment is very high for alternative energies, despite everybody thinking they're, you know, bad oil, you know, whatever that is. Like, it just, there's so much effort into that. And, you know, as a tech company, you always look to investment from these companies. And, you know, and those, you know, venture arms of the super majors are like, no, we're investing in decarbonization. Like, those are the investments and the platforms that we're seeking, you know, because we are innovating just as much as anybody else. So I think what you're explaining is spot on what I've seen, you know, a lot of other oil companies do is, you know, yeah, we're actually an energy company. We're not oil. We're like anything that produces energy for coffee makers. Like, that's what we're doing. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I, you know, again, I am from St. Louis, Missouri. We are not an oil city here. And so I have a lot of friends and people that I interact with that are just like, you know, oh, oil and gas, is it over? You know, and it's like, no, not at all. You know, I'm not sure you realize how much they're investing in all these other types of energies. So thank you.
And is the fair challenge is something that keeps you thinking, keeps you alive. And it's a very important task.
And that is actually, that's the next part of the question is, you know, for fans, 2026 feels like an eternity for us. But, you know, I know every team and every manufacturer is working on the 2026 engine for a while now. I mean, how challenging of a feat is that for you to prepare fuel for 3 years from now?
It's a big challenge because it's a huge change. So by having been working with Ferrari since a long time, we are used obviously in what has been fuel in the past. Obviously the engine has gone through major changes over the years. But it was a kind of a normal journey to keep improving. And in the past, a couple of years ago, it was even possible to introduce upgrades of fuel formulation during the season. So if you work in motorsports, you know that the pace is very, very high. You have to be responsive, you have to be reactive, you have to be a quick thinker, and you have to provide solutions, viable solutions in short time. During COVID, things have changed a lot. And in 2020, 2021, the kind of development phase has slowed down because the regulation have changed and they mandated just one formulation per season. That means that you as a developer have a full year to develop something. But while doing, you know, small upgrades during the season was a kind of a quick trick, you know, trimming the formulation to give smaller steps ahead. In 1 year, you have to get a big performance improvement all at once. So you don't have multiple times to try and fail, but you just have to go for a big one. But giving you the longer time gives you also the opportunity to try things that otherwise would be too risky. And therefore the technology opportunities open up. Now, going into a completely new territory, because you can't just upgrade whatever was the fuel in the past, you have to think from a new perspective, you have to start learning with new components. It's like building a Lego house with completely new bricks. You can't just apply the pattern that you've been using until now. So, and that is, from one side, is the big challenge. But from the other side is something that really keeps you on your toes. And it's the fun part of that. If it was too easy, it would be boring, isn't it? So we really have a big challenge, and we need the time. First of all, because we need to understand how to do it in the right way. But secondly, because some of these elements, some of these bricks don't even exist. So that is where we need to use our expertise as a big corporate, because we have knowledge in trading, we have knowledge in manufacturing, we have knowledge in processing, we have knowledge in bio components, low carbon fuels. And by pulling together all this expertise, that is what really makes a strong team and a strong partner to think about what is the best solution to this question. So yes, is a long time, because in comparison to what we've been used to in the past is quite a long time. But no, it's not a long time, because the requirements and the actions and some of the work streams require a long time. They require months to upgrade plants or find the right route to manufacture new components, or to really identify the best formulation that you need. And that is why it's absolutely required to have this time, because it's going to be a major earthquake in all the technology design. I mean, not only for fuels, the regulation are going to be impacting massively also how the power unit is going to be designed. You said yourself, it's going to be 50-50. That's a big change.
Yeah,
That is where you have really the big opportunity to be the most innovative team and find the best solution before the others.
I love how you talk about the complexity. I've talked to other business owners and whatnot, and they kind of ask me all the time, how do you stay engaged, or like what fires you up? And I always tell them, I love complexity. I think if you were to walk up to me with a 10,000 piece puzzle and drop it on the table, and like, it would just keep me focused forever. It'd be like, oh, this is so messy. Like, I have to put it all together. Most people are like, yeah, it's too much. I'm out. Like, I'm done. I love the hard. I love the challenge. Maybe it's the entrepreneur in me, but I love a situation where somebody says that's probably impossible. And I think that that's sounds to me like that's the feat or the task that's been placed on fuel suppliers for Formula One for 2026 is like, yeah, we're just going to challenge you to create something that doesn't exist today. And you guys are like, yes, let's go.
That's it.
So normally, and I'm going to change gears here. So normally I don't talk about the role and the stuff, but you are kind of a partner supplier to the sport versus an actual team member. And you are also a component of the sport that I, has been, my entire career has been energy and fuel and oil and gas. And so I generally don't spend as much time, but how did you get into motorsports? Like, was this something you've always wanted to do? Was this a family love? Like, how did this whole path begin?
It kind of came together. So I've always been Ferrari fan. So okay. as an Italian, you like Formula One, then you're by default a Ferrari fan.
Yep.
And my dad used to watch Formula One on TV, so I used to watch with him. I got into that, it was in the 90s, I was watching every Sunday, and it was something that I really enjoyed and I really liked. Then by studying chemistry, you actually don't plan to have a career in Formula One. So I kind of had that as a hobby, and I kind of used my free time. But when I started working for Shell, I joined the company as a fuel scientist. So I was in technology, spent all my career in technology. And I discovered that they had this team working in partnership with Ferrari. So dedicated fuel scientists looking at formulations, and part of the team was going to the races and everything. I thought, oh, I really like that job. It would be really cool. So I started thinking, how can I possibly shape my career to be there where I wanted to be in some time. It was, I have to say, a well thought, well planned journey, because this job has a lot of trouble in it, has a lot of accountability, I'm leading a team of 13 people. So you can't just go there as a rookie and get the job. You need a little bit of experience. So what I did during my career, I used the opportunity to be at Shell that helps you shaping your own career a lot to, you know, get that exposure and those skills that I knew would have been required for this job the day where I was ready to go for that. In the meantime, you know, life happens. I have kids, I have family, I have a house. So I got through all the stages. And then now my kids are teenagers. They're happy if I'm away of the house. I said, no, I can travel more. So after I build up my expertise and I've done the things I wanted to do in my personal life, I thought it would be now a good time to go for this job. And I had the opportunity that the window was open. I applied. It was a harsh competition, but in the end, I managed to get it. And I can say I'm in my dream job. I always wanted to be here, and now I can do it. And it's awesome. I'm really loving it.
So there was a video that your team sent me from Facebook. It was just a brilliantly produced video, just kind of a snippet about you. Where in this transition did you, because you left Italy, right? And you basically started over somewhere else. Like walk us through that. Because that's hard. Like, that's challenging.
Yeah. It's a big challenge. Yeah. So actually, I left Italy after my degree.
Okay.
So I did university in Italy, in Pisa. And after that, I knew I didn't want to have a kind of an academic career. I wanted to work in a company to make more practical things. I really liked to do practical things close to the everyday life.
Yeah.
So I was looking for a job, and in Italy I didn't find any, and I applied for a fellowship in Germany in a university for a PhD, and I was selected. So they gave me the opportunity to go, and my plan was, yeah, I go there for 3 years and then go back to Italy, do my career, whatever. And the plan obviously didn't work out. Because after a PhD, I was again looking for jobs, and I had a fantastic opportunity at Shell in Hamburg. So I left Italy, went to central Germany, and then instead of going back, I went up north. So in 2005, I moved here to Hamburg for the Shell job, and then I decided to stay. It's a fantastic city. I found my dimension. And I really have a work that gives me a lot of satisfaction. That's an important component in my life. It's something that for me was always very, very important. And I could really fulfill this ambition.
Okay. I'm going to go cultural here, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for this one. But so you go from Italy. You go to Germany. That's a substantial language. Like, that's not, what do they call it? The love languages of, like, Spanish, Italian. There are not a lot of synergies between the two languages. Did you grow up multilingual? Because here in the U.S., we know English very well. And occasionally we understand Spanish. And occasionally we kind of have an understanding of another language. But as I've traveled to other countries, people know like seven languages. Like
yeah, because like, you guys are spoiled.
People that work in
speak English.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And we were in Aruba a couple of years ago, and we were on a catamaran going on a snorkeling trip. And, you know, I started talking to one of the guys that worked on the boat. And he would be talking to me in English, and then he would, you know, he would start speaking Dutch, and then he would speak French, and and I could recognize these languages. And I was like I was fascinated and just like blown away by the fact that like that skill set allows you to engage socially other human beings at another level that is just completely unattainable by myself.
It's not only the engagement with other people, is really a brain opener, because what you can say with words is also a kind of a vision of the world you're in.
Yeah.
By learning a language, you learn a culture. There are some expressions that exist in German. You don't have a word for that in Italian. And you don't even think about that in Italian.
Yeah.
So learning new languages is really a way to see a completely a new world, to explore a new world, and to have an open mind. So no, I was not raised bilingual, to go back to your original question. I had to do it the hard way. So when I came to Germany, I arrived in this team, where I did my PhD, and everybody was German. So I started a little bit with English because it was a common ground, but then they would soon fall into German. Of course, you have 15 people and just one doesn't speak a language. Sooner or later, you forget about them. So I had to work hard to find my place in this team. And I went to classes, and then I don't know, I just tend to copy people. So I started talking. And for me, talking and having this interaction is very, very important. So I was really putting a lot of time and effort into being able to talk to people and understand what they say. And that worked out well. So we say it took me 3 years to have a proper conversation, but then I was managing very well. But I'm not a perfectionist. So what happened is that as soon as I could have a conversation with everybody, stop learning, that's enough. People understand me. So I still do a lot of errors, and German grammar is harsh. German language is very difficult. So now I have two kids that go to school, and they're really good. So they have very high notes, and they're very good grades, and they're doing really well at school. And whenever I have to write something, I get them to correct it, or they laugh at me when I talk to other people and say, "Oh, you leave years and study years, you still can't say that correctly." So,
you say spoiled, and I would say handicapped is probably a better word for that, because we travel, our family travels, and like we love experiencing new culture. And you know, hear a lot of that travel to date with our kids, you know, they're teenagers as well, has been to, you know, South America and those areas. And so we have a elementary level Spanish. I could speak it fluently as a child. I grew up in California, so I could speak it fluently. So it kind of comes back a little bit, but like when you're there and you're in it, it comes back a lot faster, you know. And we'll jump on apps to just like to refresh before we go, but you're right, the ability to engage the culture is a much higher level when you speak the language versus like forcing them to like speak English. It's a far different engagement and interaction. So I'm jealous. You've just inspired me to like pick up new languages. We want to go to Italy next year, so I want to go catch the race and go to Maranello. So part of that and visiting my family is Italian. So I guess I got to start. It's all your fault.
You should come this year. I'm gonna be in Monza, so you should come this year.
This year is just the U.S. races. The budget gets too much. Maybe your races are cheaper, but the U.S. races are pretty costly. I haven't gotten to the point yet where people are flying me out to races to engage. So I have to spend the money, and I bring my kids with me when I go. So it's not just myself. But next year we're shooting for a couple of European races. So as I always tell people, once you've been on the show, you're a friend of the show. I still have like I have an entire WhatsApp channel for like all the people I've had on the show because nobody texts overseas. They all use WhatsApp. And so I have like, you know, all the people that I still, you know, even the first person on my show, you know, I still communicate with very regularly. So I will always reach out when I'm in the area or I know somebody's
That's
kind
awesome.
Of in the city. It's been a really neat experience to go. And I was telling some of my coworkers yesterday that were asking about the race. I said, it was interesting because there's 200 and some odd thousand people at the track and I know nobody, but then I walk into the paddock
and, you know, and it's everybody. Like,
and I know a bunch of people and it's kind of like, well, how do I get this? Like, I can't buy it. So like, how do I get it? And it's, it's changed my whole like dynamic of experiencing races. So anyway, I digress. So, okay. So you guys do other parts of motorsport as well. And mm-hmm. I think to me, the most interesting part of that is Formula E. How does Shell partner with Formula E? Like, how does that work?
So you have thinking Formula E engines, batteries, they are the same. So how can you gain this competitive advantage by other fluids? So if there is a fluid that can help you increasing an efficiency, like gearbox fluid, that is a key element to put a lot of effort in R&D on. And again, we can give our partners a competitive advantage by helping them improve in efficiency. And we can take learnings from this harsh environment for our road products. So that's how we partner.
And when you say harsh environment, I think in your world, that is friction and heat. Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for every fluid, every lubricating fluid is the reliability is the very important element. So protecting the engine, protecting the parts that are lubricated, and being resistant to heat, and being able, you know, to reduce friction to help the engine work at its best. That's what we do.
Okay, so career in motorsports, career in Shell, you're surrounded by Ferrari all the time. What's been your pinch me moment in this whole journey?
I have to say the pinch me moment was when I first went to a race, and it was with Shell, because as a student I had no money to get to races. It was just too expensive.
You get it.
And that was a recognition. So we did a great job, and me and the team got the opportunity to go to Spa in Belgium. To see the race. At that time, Shell was title sponsor and we had a fantastic hospitality in Eau Rouge. So it was a super luxurious thing to see the race and to be there as a guest. So I didn't even have to work. And the pinch me moment was the colleague that we're doing the preparatory job at the moment, so the motorsport colleague, they came to me and say, "Hey, Valeria, do you want to come to the paddock?" I said, "Whoa. Is that possible?" So they gave me a pass and they walked me through the paddock, and suddenly I was like, "Oh, I've seen this on TV. Oh, look at the motorhome." And it was this huge Ferrari motorhome. You know, the hospitality is nice and is a kind of a whole customer experience. And I was a customer. And then they walked me through the boxes in this guest area, and I was able to see a pit stop. And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm here. This is happening." And it was when I really realized that I could be living a dream. So that was a big moment of pushing my career, and I really worked hard from that time on to get this job.
Were you at this race? This is the 2019 Monza where Leclerc took his win. Okay.
No, I'm going to be in Monza this year, and it's the first time for me, and I'm really, really excited because that's my favorite. So I really
Okay.
can't wait to be there. It's just this a special atmosphere. Is the Ferrari home race, and it's just a wave of red fans, and so
It's the
I can't
temple of
wait.
speed. Yeah. I have to say I'm that is the one event I'm really, really looking forward to. That's kind of my bucket list event. And again, having an Italian heritage, I think, if that wasn't on my bucket list, I'd be crazy, just because it is such an energy driven environment, and it's got to be special. So plus it's your home race, so you gotta be there. What has surprised you most in motorsport? Like, what didn't you expect when you finally got there?
Probably the amount of value you put on teamwork. So motorsport, when you're just a fan and you follow the races, it's all around the drivers. And now with the Drive to Survive is the team principal, and is a couple of key personalities and figures you always see. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much people behind that, and everybody needs to perform at its best. You have to really stretch yourself, and you have to rely on everybody else in the team. So the really this people connection, this team connection, this team energy, and the trust. I mean, we're partners with Ferrari, but it when we're at races is we're a part of the team. So we have our job to do, we have to deliver, and we can count on others to help us, building the lab, dismounting the lab, and the other way around. So it's something that most people don't appreciate, but every motorsport is a team sport. And it's such a big energy and a big effort, and everybody's striving against the same goal. And obviously, when you get to win a race, everybody's is super happy and sharing this relief, this satisfaction is great.
I'm highly competitive, and I also I guess as I've matured in my career, have realized just the importance of unity and teamwork, and the importance of that, and pushing beyond just what a normal group is capable of doing when you have that kind of cohesive element of teamwork, as well as just a passion. I think passion is something that is very hard to find and difficult to come. And I was actually speaking with some people at the race about this, of just one thing I've noticed inside of Formula One and just motorsport in general, is it's about passion. If you don't have passion for what you're doing, like, you're not even a candidate. And I've not really run into anybody that I don't believe would actually do that job if they weren't getting paid. And that is, like, when you look at other industry and other types of businesses, how much am I going to get paid? And if somebody pays me more, I'm going to go work in that. Whereas, like, in motorsport, it's like, well, if you didn't pay me, then I'd have to get a part-time job so I can continue doing this. And, like, pushing as hard as I push. And I love that about the sport, because the buy-in of that is like, it's intoxicating, I think. And I think when people get around that and start to feel it, it changes the way that you look at any other role or job or industry that, would try to attract you. It's like, well, that common bond, that unity, and that passion doesn't exist there. So I'm not even going to consider it, because I want to be in this team sport. You've also, like, you also have a presence of, like, woman STEM, and I know this has been, like, the hot topic around motorsport, and frankly, I don't know if I see it, because I've had so many, like, brilliant, amazing women on the show, and have been surrounded by them just in my interaction in motorsport, but I recognize that I'm not around the epicenter of it. How, like, what does that look like for you? I mean, is that support networking? Are they events? Are they, you know, what does that look like?
I do work for a company that sees a lot of value in having diverse employees and gender equality, but also all the different subgroups are considered. And we talk around diversity and inclusiveness a lot, but definitely motorsports is a kind of a different environment. So it's, yeah, I can't say it's not male dominated. It is a lot of male going around, but I think we are seeing a change in this. So you see more and more females. And I think what you said, I've been interviewing a lot of female talents. That's what we need to do more. We need to show young girls and the new generation that, of course, there is space for women in this environment. Yeah. There is absolutely no reason why we couldn't be doing a great job as engineers or strategists or as mechanics or as drivers as well. So there are dedicated series, so the FIA Academy, and in the past it was W Series. And in a lot of other motorsports series, we see a lot of female drivers, emerging talents. And I think this is awesome because it's a slow transformation. It will require time. We're just at the beginning of the journey. But the more we get role models, the more we'll follow. And you can argue men and women are different, but that's the value of that. Women do things differently than men, and that is where you can really push the boundaries and go forward and have new ideas and implement them in a different way. So that is where innovation comes from having different points of views. And I'm a big fan of diversity, because I think we need really to value all the things that we would have never done ourselves, because we never thought of that. It's like when we were talking about foreign languages. You can't think about something if you've never seen it. So that is where I hope I can play a bigger role to inspire other talents, to show that there is space also in jobs that people would think, oh, no, that's for men only. It's not. It's not definitely.
No, I think you bring up a good point. I have kind of... have two purposes in this show, and that is A, to showcase the people of the sport, you know, like this is who they are and their show, like their thing, but it's also, you know, to me, more importantly, to provide hope to young people. I think as a 40 something professional, I run into a lot of young people that just don't know what to do, how to do something, and then in at Formula One, they see it as like Hollywood. It's like this enormous, scary thing that, you know, it's really difficult to get into and infiltrate. And it's really not. It's very accessible to people that like that try. And I ask the origin stories of how you get into the sport, because they're actually quite fascinating. I responded to a social media post. I volunteered at a race, and I ran into somebody at a team, and, you know, and there was a synergy there, and they offered to help me get into the team. Or, you know, I've seen a lot of people on social media create social media profiles and followings around motorsports that ultimately lands them a job and, you know, in marketing or sponsorship or commercial or whatever that is. And it is very accessible, but you have to be passionate about it. And I think if it's not clear that this candidate or person or personality is passionate about the sport, you know, it's kind of like, okay, it's a fan, you know, and it's not a passion. And I love that you come on the show, and I love that you talk about that stuff, because I have a daughter. Like, you know, she challenges me to think differently, but I also think it's important for her to have like strong women that open doors for her. And it doesn't mean like they actually grab her hand and like walk her into the CEO of Ferrari and like, here's what that role looks like. But the door opening, meaning like, here's the formula. Like, here's how you do that. Here's how I did it. I did it. That means you can do it. And I think that you showcase that very well. It's like, you know, if you put yourself out there, if you challenge yourself, if you're passionate about it, you will get there. And but it takes those three things to do that and accomplish that. And, you know, again, you're just a very good spokesperson for that, because you moved to a different country, you learned a new language, you saw a job opportunity that you wanted, and you worked for it and you got it. And now you're here. And, you know, you can come and say that, yes, this is achievable. And yes, you can do it. And here's how you do that, by the way. So I just, again, I love people that like you that come out and say that, and, you know, open those doors for the world, because, you know, it is very challenging. And, you know, I have my own belief system about, you know, some of the diversity and equality challenges in the sport. I think the pot is too small because young people are intimidated by the sport, or they're intimidated by something and choose a different career path from that intimidation. Mm-hmm. Versus like having platforms available to say, no, you can do it. Here's the school, here's the type of education, and here's the type of mental traits that you have to do it. And I think that that pot will fill up by people like you coming out and, you know, supporting that, talking about it, encouraging that. And that pot of candidates will grow, just like the pot of female driver candidates is like exploded. You know, it will take time for that to be at the highest level, but, you know, the pot of candidates is...
At least we have a pipeline now, which wasn't the case 10 years ago.
Perfect example, the pipeline. Everybody's like, now, where's our female Formula One driver? I'm like, oh, give them a second. These poor kids have to start racing at 4 years old. So that, what is that, 15 years in order to get there? So like, we have to at least give it that amount of time to take place. Yeah. And frankly, financial support, every female driver I've ever run into, is the most challenging part of their role is the financial support. I'm also a huge proponent of, you know, corporations supporting young drivers, and you'll never get a Hamilton without corporate support. So have Shell go get after some of these young drivers.
Actually, part of my job is around business development. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'll send them your way offline. Call Valeria. She knows what she's talking about. Seriously, I know we're running up against time on this. I'm so grateful that you came on the show. I understand, you know, the pedigree of Shell. I understand the pedigree of Ferrari. I am humbled that this was even approved, and I'm not flattering, because I realize how challenging it is, you know, from a media perspective for this to be approved. So thank you for accepting this and pushing this. And
I may say the same. So thanks for inviting me. Thanks for the interview. It's been a lovely time, and didn't even realize we're at the end of it. So it was a lovely chat.
I know. I have to respect your time. I'm only going to ask one more question, because I always ask it and I have to ask it. But as a person in motorsport at the highest level, like, what advice do you have for young people that are considering this type of career?
My advice is, but this is not only for motorsport, it's for everything young people want to do. Work hard. Don't put yourself a ceiling, or, you know, pull brakes from yourself. Be humble, but push for what you really, really want. And really, I think the hard work and showing how much you can really do, and also being conscious of how much you value, is a very important element. So I do have some personal values, and I will always work with them. I like people who are open. I like people who tell me what they think, and I do the same. I have an objective, and I really work hard for that. I put a lot of passion. I put whatever I can. I know that the more you invest into something, the more you get out of that. So that would be my advice. Know what you want, and give hard, work hard for that. And eventually you get it.
That is spot on advice. I think that when a young person, and I'll add to that, when a young person can shift their mindset to look at you can't do that to a challenge versus a beat down, I think that your advancement in life or career or passion accelerates exponentially. Because I think as a culture as a whole, we've gotten to a place where we're very pessimistic, and it's very like, oh, you're a woman, you can't do that. Okay. I teach my daughter, take that as a challenge. Don't take that as you can't. Take it as a challenge. And I think that supplemented with your advice is spot on. Work hard. And that's not hustle culture. That's work hard. Be diligent about what you do. Work in excellence. And you'll achieve anything that you want. I've never worked in motorsport, you know, and I've never been educated in engineering or motorsport. And I'm here. I'm in the paddock, and I have friends. You know, and I consider guests friends on the show,
mm-hmm.
because I've poured into those relationships. I see something happen at a race, and I send them an email or a text, and it's like, hey, good job, man. Keep at it, keep doing it, whatever comes to my mind. But like, it's pouring into that passion, and it's opened crazy doors, like crazy, yeah. crazy doors, and started this whole platform. So, you know, again, even if you're not a motorsports person, there's a place in motorsport for you. And I think that...
And you have to have the guts to take the opportunities as they come in.
Yeah.
So that would be also my advice. Don't fear of just go and do things that you've never done before.
Yeah. That's awesome. You're an awesome guest.
Thank you.
There's so much more I want to talk about. I have meetings I have to get to in like 10 minutes, and I'm just like, oh, there's like four bullet points here. I want to just like sit in for a minute, and we have to end it. I have to respect my schedule and yours, but seriously, thank you for coming on. And I hope that, you know, if I can get to Germany or Italy, I hope, you know, can come shake your hand or say hi. But
yeah.
I work with your coworkers all the time. You have some amazing humans at Shell, and you know, they've been good to me and my career. And there's a lot of Formula One fans at your company, and that's always kind of the highlight of my meeting. Is it's like pre-Drive to Survive, it was the company I could go visit on a sales call and talk Formula One, and not, you know, collegiate sports or, you know, the typical baseball, football, basketball conversation. So
So this year I'm not doing any US races. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, let me know when you're around. And if I happen to be in the same race, let's meet for a coffee. And can we continue the conversation?
Definitely. And I always offer up part two. If you ever want to come back on, you do it. Because I will ask at some point. So
I'm
never scared to ask. So
thank you so much for hosting me. It was a lovely chat. Really enjoyed.
Thank you for your time, and thank you for your wisdom and just providing hope to young people. You've like nailed the purpose behind the show. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Cheers, Brian. Take care. Have a good day.
You too.